I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode. Should we say episode, Sarah? An episode of the Squiggly Careers podcast from Amazing If. I'm Helen Tupper, and I'm here with Sarah.
Hi, everyone.
And this week, we are going to be talking about how to do a great interview. But before we get into that, I think we should have a little chat about our weeks. Sarah, how are you getting on? How are you getting on this week?
Well, this week is feeling particularly squiggly and full on. I really enjoy having jobs that have peaks and troughs. I actually find that really energising. But there's peaks, and then you know when there's like, I don't know what's above a peak.
Just the super peak.
Something
the
above
summit,
that.
I don't know.
Where just, and I think everyone has this, whether it's within a week or within a month, where multiple things happen simultaneously. And I'm kind of in the midst of that, both like personally and professionally. So there's a load of stuff happening, like really brilliant work, all things that I'm really enjoying. And then I've also simultaneously got quite a few other things that I'm managing simultaneously, like people travelling, coming back from Australia, who I'm really excited to see, one of my friends. But at the same time as that, my other half's on a stag do, and loads of... So there is a list of about 10 things where at some point I'm relatively worried that we're just going to forget my little boy and he'll just be left waiting at a train station or something because I'll have forgotten who was meant to be where at what point. But I'm assured it will all work out. There certainly seems to be a plan, but I am doing a slightly take one day at a time approach to life at the moment, which actually I don't love. That's not usually the way I like to think ahead. I like to plan, but I do sometimes find in those peaks, if we're going to call them that, just going, it will all be okay. It's almost like the tennis analogy of like one shot at a time. And you'll
get there.
Of course,
the tennis analogy.
Of course, the tennis analogy. Basically, in tennis, if you just win every point, then obviously, ultimately, you win the game, you win the match. And I revert to this kind of attitude of like, okay, well, if I do that really well, and then that really well, and just keep going, at some point, everything will be good.
My mother-in-law has this phrase, which I really like, actually. It's called, this too will pass. And I kind of feel like, I've had those peaks enough that I know that this too will pass. So that is my guidance to you. I'm actually your mirror. I think my week is a lot quieter. This week in Microsoft, well, actually, I've got a new manager. That's quite exciting. Particularly as we did a podcast, I can't remember the episode number off the top of my head, but we did a podcast relatively recently on how to manage your manager. So I should probably go re-listen to that one.
So do you want him to listen to that or not listen to that?
Well, I don't know. I don't want him to know that I've got a plan.
Yeah.
New manager, but also it's a funny week in Microsoft there. Microsoft puts on a big conference every year. This year it's in Las Vegas. And because of my holiday and various reasons, I'm not going to it, but there's a lot of people out there. They go to Vegas and they hear all about the great Microsoft news and what's happening. And it's a really big cultural event. So that means that the office is quite quiet. So it's a first month of our new fiscal year. I've got a new manager, half my team are in America. So it's kind of a funny time. So it's very different to the pace of your week, I think. So back to today's topic then, interviews. And why are interviews important in squiggly careers? Well, I'll kind of give you my take on it, and then maybe Sarah, if you agree. But my take on why I think actually doing great interviews is important in squiggly careers is because we are going to be changing jobs a lot more often. That's the kind of nature of squiggly careers. There's lots more change. Some of it you are in control of, some of it you might not be in control of. But ultimately, we're going to be doing a lot more jobs, which is probably going to give rise to quite a few more interviews. And hopefully, the more you develop the skills to navigate that squiggly career, the more you're aware of what you value, what you're great at, who can help you. So the more you're kind of going for jobs that are actually going to make you happy. So ultimately, you really want to get that job. If you're going for the right job because you know what you're great at and you found a match, then you really want to sell yourself in that job so that you can get that job that's going to be a great next point on your squiggly career. So we want to help you, set you up for success for that, because that's kind of why it's important. Have you got any other context, Sarah, of why this is a good topic for us to be covering on our podcast?
Well, my one other thought in the context of squiggly careers is I think I found over the past probably 5 or 6 years, there's also those situations where you're interviewing but not interviewing. And if I just explain what I mean by that, I think you end up having more informal conversations to explore opportunities. And we've talked before about kind of exploring career possibilities, which is not like a lot of the interviews I had at the start of my career, which were very formal, very structured, competency-based interviews, which I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about today in terms of our experience of doing those. We've both done a lot of them. I find that that kind of overly processed, structured way of interviewing is becoming less common, even in, you know, the really big organisations we've both worked in. And increasingly, you sometimes are going for a very specific job and it is a pure interview scenario. But I think there is kind of lots of things around the periphery which you're essentially exploring something that could become a job opportunity in the future or a person you might want to work with in the future. And so I think a lot of the skills and sort of hints and tips we're going to talk about today are very relevant in a kind of wider context than just the sort of formal interview.
So hopefully that's given you a bit of a feel for why listening to this the next half an hour is going to be a good use of time for your squiggly career. What we are going to do today is we're going to do a bit of insight into our best and worst interviews. So again, we've not shared this in advance, so I'm so looking forward to hearing Sarah's. And then we are going to both share our top three tips. So you'll get 6 tips all in all for how we approach interviews. Also, I think some reflections from when we've interviewed people. We've both interviewed, I don't know how many people in our careers, but lots. And so we're kind of surfacing the things that we think really work for you to be successful in that moment. And then we'll conclude, as ever, with some resources we think you can help you after the podcast. So let's get into, because I can't wait.
Should we start with the worst ones? Because let's face it, that's what everybody wants to hear. Everyone will expect us to start with the best ones, but I think we should start with the worst, because that'll be the bit where people are like, go on, tell us what you were. I'll go. I don't mind going first if you want me to.
Okay, you go.
Plus, I think I've even told the people, I still know really well the 2 people who interviewed me for my worst ever interview. It's quite an unusual situation. So the context was, I was working in Sainsbury's. There was a big restructure. This is probably 5 or 6 years ago now. So I was relatively new to joining Sainsbury's. And I was interviewing for a job that was more senior to the job that I'd got. But I knew going into that interview that the existing role that I was doing was disappearing. So it was very high stress, very high pressured. And I knew the 2 people interviewing me really well. So it was actually somebody who I went on to work for at a later stage, and who was the director of that area at that time. And the other person was, and still is, my mentor. And those 2 people, like I say, are still people, both of whom I would consider mentors today, who I get on with brilliantly, who've been so supportive and helpful in my career. But that interview was a disaster. And oh my God, I'd prepared. No one had prepared for that interview more than me, because my sort of default when I'm under a lot of pressure is, you know, the sort of you over-prepare to the extent where you've thought about every single scenario and hypothesis that could ever happen or every question that could ever emerge. So I think I went in so tightly wound, under pressure, over-prepared. And then when I got into this interview, and it was a very formal setting. At the time, it was in like a boardroom on a floor where, and this doesn't exist anymore in Sainsbury's, but it was all very formal boardrooms. Massive table, 2 of them sitting opposite you. You're in this massive, great big room and you're just sitting there feeling very small. And I absolutely capitulated. And at the time, I think I knew it was happening a little bit, but afterwards, I definitely knew some specifics about just how bad it was. I didn't answer any of the questions properly. Because I got to this point where I think I almost had a monologue that I wanted to share with everybody, that it didn't matter what was asked, I just sort of said whatever I'd kind of already got in my head. So I didn't listen to anything that was being said. And intentionally, there were some questions that they chose to ask that were kind of outside of the normal capability, experience type questions. And they did that to test how good are you on your feet? What was your thought process? And I will share this question with you, because it was at this point where essentially there was no recovery for me because I did such a bad job. I reckon you'll be good at this. But the question was, okay, Sarah, how many lawnmowers do you think there are in the UK?
Oh, I hate those interview questions. I've had some of those type of things before. What did you do? I would do like number of households in the UK.
No. What I did was froze. Let's be really clear about what happened. Was I froze and panicked and struggled to even start to even say anything. And by this point, you know, when you kind of go, oh, I just want to die inside and I want to leave, and this is so painful. And I think it was so painful for them at that point that one of the people interviewing me did sort of start me off exactly like you just sort of said, and kind of went, oh, you know, maybe start with how many people there are in the UK. And I was thinking, oh, I don't know. And I still wouldn't be very good at those style of questions. It doesn't play to my strengths.
I've had a few of those different questions. I've had them maybe twice in my career. Once at Capital One, where they asked me, it was some distances to do with some boats and trains and something. And I cannot remember the other one. But for anyone who has those interview questions, the importance is actually not your answer. So if you get the logic of how you answer the question and the answer right, you're brilliant. But actually the most important thing is your logic. So for example, the question that Sarah's talking about, a really good way of approaching it is saying, well, the way I'm going to approach this question is I'm going to make an assumption about how many people live in the UK, or you might actually know that, and therefore how many households there are. I'm going to make an assumption about how many people have gardens and what percentage of those people who have gardens own their own lawnmower.
So listening to you, that is exactly what you should have done, clearly. I did absolutely none of that. And, you know, some of it you kind of notch down to experience, and Helen is 100% right. They did not care about the answer. We've actually probably not talked about it that much in the last few podcasts about growth and fixed mindset. I think my fixed mindset in that moment was they were looking for the right answer here. I am meant to be able to get to something close to the right answer. Of course they're not looking for the right answer. What they're looking for is actually you to take a kind of growth mindset attitude to answering that question and just have a go and explain what you're doing. And I reckon if you'd have done a good job of explaining why you got to where you got to, I think you could have been wildly wrong and they wouldn't care. Some people are naturally better at those sorts of things. Absolutely. I was never good at, you know, those kind of numeric assessment-y type things that you have to do. And I'm really rubbish at here's a triangle, a square and a circle and a oblong. What's the next shape? And I'm like, I don't know. And how is that ever going to help me in my job? And then I also get really angry and frustrated that, A, I can't do it, and that I don't think it's very applicable. It is critical thinking and it is useful, but it is genuinely just something I've always really struggled with. So that interview was an absolute disaster. And I knew it had been, albeit I still sort of thought, oh, I don't know, they know me. Maybe they'll still give me the job. I mean, they didn't, rightly so, for lots of reasons. But I found that whole process, you know, we sort of talk about like learning as you go. Just in that moment, it was certainly just something where I found that really kind of hard point in my career, in terms of you're under lots of stress and pressure anyway. You don't then perform particularly well under that pressure. And then you're left to cope in a kind of situation that personally is really hard to deal with. You know, when you talk about like resilience and the ability to bounce back, which ultimately I did, you know, I stayed at Sainsbury's for four more years after that. And it was probably my favourite place to work out of everywhere I've worked so far in my career. And, you know, those two people are two of my favourite people. So it does show how, you know, you can totally come back from it. Yeah, it wasn't my finest moment. I bet you if I shared this with them, I reckon they'd remember, because I think it was that bad.
They go, share it and see. So I do not speak to the person from my worst interview, but that's because we didn't speak at any time afterwards. So about 14 years ago, I went for an interview. I think Sarah will laugh at this whole story. But I went for an interview with Aldi. So this is not long after we'd finished uni. I was looking for my next move. I think this is a big shiny object thing. So Aldi...
Didn't you get a really good car?
Yeah, you got a really good car and the highest graduate salary. I think that was quite a big driver for me applying for the role. But also it was quite hard. I love a job that's hard to get. I still probably do. And so I knew this is an in-demand job. partly because of those factors. And I went for the interview, got through whatever first stage, and then went for this final interview. And it was an assessment centre held at somewhere near Coventry. And there were probably about 12 other people in this assessment centre. I may have been one of the only women there. The other people were all guys. And it was the most weird assessment centre. So it's quite aggressive, lacked any kind of emotion. Some of the exercises that we were asked to do were, we were all sat around a table, and then we were told to pick up something in front of us and sell it to everybody on the table with no thinking. So I had to I had to pick up a pen and be like, so this is a great Bic pen. It's got fluid writing. It's got a lid that you can click on very smoothly, but you had to do it for a minute. So to try and sell a pen for a minute, that was quite hard. Then we did that exercise where you have to decide who you're going to throw out of the boat. So I'm a doctor, there's a child, the blah, 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 who you're going to throw out of the boat. That was okay. And then the worst bit was the one-on-one interview, which I'd ordinarily like, but it was with a very inanimate guy who gave no feedback and just told me to talk about myself and didn't interrupt at all, and no facial expression, so no cues of how you were doing. And then at the end of the interview, he said, "You talk too much." And I was like, I'm not sure. Basically, it was a bad fit. But when I didn't get that job, unsurprisingly, which is probably a very good thing for them and for me, I was a bit like, oh, I always get jobs. How have I not got this job? But actually, it was a good thing. And I can totally see why. I think
I love the arrogance as well of youth, of us both being like, well, I've just done the worst interview in history, but maybe I'll still get the job. Probably be fine.
I think it was a good thing I didn't get that job. It would have been a really bad cultural fit for me at that time in my career. And I think the wrong things were driving me for that opportunity. But, you know, it was still, I will never forget having to sell a pen for a minute and thinking, why did I pick a pen? Couldn't I have picked something a bit more complicated? I'm just a bad salesperson. So let's do best then. Do you want to do your best interview?
So my best one, it's probably not a one-off interview, but a process that I've been part of, which is actually my current job, which I've been in probably for about 4 or 5 months now. When I was thinking about this role and started talking to the company that I work for now, which who are called Gravity Road, I had lots and lots of what I would call almost like mini interviews. And actually, it's probably the first time that I've spent that much time with people before joining an organisation. And that was so positive. It means that you get a real feel for the organisation, the people you're going to be working with a lot, the challenges they're facing, what they're looking for from that person. And it meant that I also spent a lot of time, I guess, sharing with them what I was looking for. So, you know, what did I want to spend my time doing? Where did I think I could add the most value? And was that what they needed? And I felt like we were having very honest conversations about how the role was going to work, whether I was going to work. I got to meet some other people from the organisation as well. And I knew a few people already, so that was kind of useful. And actually, it was over quite a long period of time as well. It was probably at least 4 months from when I first met them to have a very speculative conversation through to going, okay, then I've agreed that we're going to do this. And for me, that just felt so equitable. Mm-hmm. So it felt like you'd both got something to give and you've got something to gain. It felt very authentic, and I felt like they kind of really got to know me. It's always really hard until you start an organisation to know, are you going to enjoy it? Is it going to be the right thing for you? Especially when you're moving companies. But I felt like I'd gone as far as I possibly could without literally starting work there. And I felt like it was a process where we kind of went and talked about the things that were needed to be talked about at the right time. So we got to one point where I did do like a mini little presentation in quite an informal way, but just to start sort of sharing some of my thinking. So I felt like they got an insight into the way I approached a challenge or a problem. We started talking about, you know, what I would do differently in the role in terms of for the industry. Well, like when I reflect on all of the kind of interview process I've been through, lots of sort of short, sharp interactions with multiple people in multiple places. It just meant that I think I'd got different options in terms of job offers at that time. And I felt really confident making the choice. So when I was thinking, is this the right thing? I really felt like, yep, I'm making the right decision for me based on all the information that I have.
My best example is obviously a different company, but there's some similarities around these kind of like repeated mini interviews. So my best example of an interview process is actually at Microsoft. For the first role that I joined Microsoft for, it was quite a long process. What was really valuable about it was the person who recruited me was a big, big fan of growth mindset. And it is something that Microsoft have really adopted internally. We talk about it a lot. But he had specifically applied it to the interview process, which I haven't actually seen since I've been at Microsoft. It was something that he distinctly did. And the growth mindset, I mean, it's partly why me as a non-technical person got brought into that company, was because of his growth mindset, because he was recruiting for other things, not just kind of the knowledge of the technical workings of products and the industry. But the process was, I had a couple of informal interviews with him, but the bit that was really valuable was he'd set up four people to do like speed dating interviews with me. And I had four fast-paced half-hour interviews with different people from the team. So two peers, someone that worked for me, and I think someone from a different department. There were four people, half an hour slots. And they just asked me really broad questions. So it was not a competency-based thing at all. They were like, you know, can you tell me about why you want the role? Just really broad questions. But it meant that I could really authentically show up because of the types of questions that they were asking. I got to meet lots of different people through the process. Like, there's been interviews where I've only ever met one person from a company, and you're being asked to make a decision about, do you want to work in this company? And you've only got a very small insight into it. In this one, I met six people that I would be working with through that interview process, not including some of the people from HR. It just felt authentic, not forced, gave me an opportunity to see whether I would fit this team as well as they could see whether I would fit it. And it was very much like a fit thing. It wasn't just like a tick list of, has she got that experience? It was, would she fit here? Could she contribute? Would she thrive here? And it just felt like a really, really good process. That speed interviewing thing where you get to meet lots of different people is definitely something I would replicate again.
Do you know what's consistent actually listening to both of our stories is that clearly those organisations had recognised just how important it is to think about who joins your organisation and the kind of the impact that that has, so that it's worth investing in that process because you recognise how valuable getting the right people are. There's a guy called Jim Collins who wrote a book about good to great, both in terms of organisations that go from good to great and leaders that do the same. And somebody asked him, from all the research he's done, what's the one thing you'd say to people in terms of all of those insights that you should like really think about, really focus on? And he says, get the right people on the bus. That's like his one thing, is like, of everything that he's done and all of those kind of the different factors that are involved in going from good to great, the importance of having the right people in the right places seems to be the kind of overriding factor. And I think with both of our experiences, that's people and companies that have recognised that and go, it's worth taking the time over, it's worth investing time in, and we're going to prioritise it.
So let's assume then that you think this is the right place for you. You've got an interview coming up and you think it's the right place for the right time for your career, and you want to do a brilliant job. What we're going to do next is give you six tips. We'll alternate between Sarah and I and give you six tips that we think will really help you to be your best self in that interview and hopefully get that job that's going to be the next great step on your career. So shall I do the first one, Sarah, and then we'll each do one each? So my first tip for you is to think pre and post the interview in terms of the people that you're going to be meeting. And what I mean by that is, I've done a lot of interviews where people have just turned up and they haven't asked anything about me beforehand. They just literally turn up in that moment and then I never hear from them again. But actually, what a much more effective thing to do is ask whoever the contact is that's setting up the interview for you. Generally, it's HR. Ask them who you're going to be meeting. Make sure you know, that's absolute basic. Make sure you know the names of the people that you are going to be meeting in that interview process. And then do a little bit of light research / stalking of those people. Go on LinkedIn, get a feel for how long they've been in the company, maybe what roles they've done beforehand. Google them, see if they've done any writing. If you Googled me, you'd see all my Marketing Week writing. You'd get a really good feel for the things that I am passionate about. And therefore, if you're in an interview with me, you don't have to be really overt and play that all back. You know, you'd be talking about learning and development and growth mindset because you know that's the sort of thing that I value if you'd just done 1 minute of searching about me. So make sure you invest in that pre-phase. Find out who it is, do the research. Part of it's just contextual. You don't, like I say, you don't have to play it all back in the interview. And then post the interview, do some kind of follow-up. Connect with them on LinkedIn. If you've got their email, thank them. Send them any other thoughts that you've got. I do not bombard them. Like, I think actually post an interview, this is a one effort thing to do. Like, if you repeatedly message someone, I think you're at risk of frustrating them. But I would always say to somebody, I'd connect with them on LinkedIn and I'd say, thanks for your time earlier today. I would do it within 24 hours. Appreciated the interview. Look forward to hearing from you. Would like to connect here. That's probably how much I would leave it. But just so that you've got some kind of like stickiness with that person and you're not just the person who was in a room for 45 minutes and then you've gone and they can forget you. So think about pre and post, not just the in the moment interview. That's my first tip.
And the one thing I build on that with is I have been very surprised by how few people research the organisation. So I would research both the individuals, but also the organisation. I always have asked questions to sort of see people's level of knowledge and understanding of the organisation they're coming for the interview with and the industry that you're part of. I don't mind if people from a different industry, that's often interesting, but I still expect you to know a bit. And when I say know a bit, I mean, to Helen's point, literally you've gone on the website, see what the latest news stories are. You know, when I was at Sainsbury's, I would always ask people, what's your local Sainsbury's like? What would be your favourite Sainsbury's product? And if people couldn't even come up with something there, I'd always be a bit worried.
Yeah, good point. You've got me thinking now about my favourite Sainsbury's product.
Ooh, we'll come back to it. We'll come back to mine for reference, oat and raisin cookies from the in-store bakery.
I think mine's an organic plain yoghurt.
I can guarantee yours won't be that.
What did organic you say plain yoghurt, you know, in the green pots? I think it's called like So Sainsbury's Organic.
That is so
it's a really good Greek yoghurt. Anyway, moving on. Your tip.
So a lot of my tips come from where I've gone wrong so that people don't do the same. My top tip is listen. You spend a lot of time preparing for an interview, hopefully, if you're taking it seriously. So I don't think you should over-prepare, but I do think you should spend the time doing things that Helen and I have just talked about. And then when you actually meet somebody, it's really hard because you're nervous. You're nervous and, you know, it's an unusual situation that you find yourself in. Depends how confident you are as well meeting new people. I always find that's nerve-wracking anyway, and then you kind of layer on an interview process. So make sure you're sort of, before you go in, you just remind yourself, kind of deep breath first, spend some time listening to what the person's got to say, and just make sure then you're answering what they're asking you, not what you hoped they would be saying.
Good tip.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, my next one is actually in relation to that listening one a little bit, is to not just do like a question answer format. So I think when you're nervous in an interview situation, it's really easy to sit there and sort of wait for the questions. So can you tell me about a time when you've led a team or whatever the question is, and then give your answer that you've prepped, and then you just stop and you wait for the next question, and you're in this kind of like ping pong question answer thing. But it's a bit false. It's not showing you at your relaxed state. You're not necessarily building the rapport with the interviewer as well. So just try and break down, if you feel that's happening, try and break it down. And some ways that you can do that are, you can bring props. I don't mean like juggling balls and things, but I mean like relevant props. So for example, as a marketeer, I could bring some marketing campaigns that I've been part of. I could bring some visual examples of those, or I could bring some campaigns that I think are great, or I could maybe have done some kind of models of work or something, but just kind of bring something tangible with you that you can sort of use as your conversation so that you can almost create more of a discussion. I much prefer in interviews if I can take it away from somebody's interviewing me and I'm answering these questions to much more of a discussion and almost trying to get it as like a peer-to-peer discussion. That feels much more comfortable. So props are a good way to try and break that question answer thing that might be going on. Also, I find that drawing what I'm thinking, I'm quite a visual person, so I will often, rather than just answering a question, I tend to think in models.
Oh, you don't draw a Venn diagram, do you?
I'll draw whatever it is. It could be a triangle, it could be a Venn diagram.
I bet it's a Venn diagram.
It could be a 2x2 model. It doesn't really matter, but I find...
Oh, I'd absolutely love to see you do that. That's so
funny. I do it all the time. I do it in meetings.
Oh, I know you do, but I didn't know you did it in interviews.
Yeah, I do it all the time. Because I find... it stops me waffling, but in a people suddenly engage with it. I noticed this actually when I used to do lots of jobs in innovation, and as soon as you created a prototype, and it could be from a piece of paper that you'd kind of twisted into, this is how I'm thinking this thing could work, but as soon as you create kind of something physical or tangible, people start engaging with it in a different way. And it's the same thing in an interview. You take it from being this thing that's in your mind that you're regurgitating in speech to somebody to something they can see and talk about. So if you think, don't do it if your brain doesn't quite work like that, but if you're a visual thinker and it is useful for you to articulate your thoughts about a project you've run or your learnings or how you might approach a challenge in a visual way on a flip chart or on a piece of paper, then be prepared to do that. Or maybe change the dynamic. You can maybe stand up for some of it if you're doing a presentation first, maybe stand up and then sit down. I just try and break the I'm sat here.
I've just got an image of you now, though, just halfway through, just being like, I'm just going to stand up now.
Well, I might do. You laugh, but I've definitely done that. When I've done a presentation before, I've definitely said, I'm just going to stand up.
It clearly works. You pretty much always get your job. So.
Because I find that if I've got a big screen up where I've done some slides, I kind of want to stand up and point to that, and I want to engage people in it. My last tip on this point is also ask them questions back. So that is probably the easiest way of breaking this pattern of them asking a question, you answering it, is to say, you give your answer and you say, how does that compare to the experience here? Or is that something that you think would work here? So just to try and just, the aim of it is to break the pattern. I've given you a few ideas.
Oh, I could just imagine you just going like, you know, I've asked you a question and then almost you're like asking me the question back and I'm thinking, but I thought I was interviewing here.
I love interviews, by the way. I do love them.
I can see that.
So that is my much mocked tip from Sarah, but has worked repeatedly for me.
Yeah, exactly. You can't knock it.
I can't knock it. Well, you do. You have.
Oh, yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah, I did. So
your tip, Sarah.
My second tip is ask good questions. And I think I was meaning less asking questions of the interviewer as they were going through, more remembering that it is a two-way process and that when you are being interviewed, it's really easy to lose sight of that because, of course, you're going for that job because it's something that you at least intuitively think, well, I want to do this. So it feels like sometimes there's more in it for you than there kind of is for the organisation. But don't forget, you need it to be a really good fit. So think about the things that are really important to you or that maybe you don't know and try and ask some meaningful questions at the end of the interview. Or you might be able to ask them as you go through, especially if it's more kind of informal or you're just having a discussion. And not being afraid to ask those things, I think, is really important. My example would be flexibility is really important to me at work, both in terms of the culture and for me personally, to be able to make my life work generally. And a job could be the best job ever, but if the premise of flexibility wasn't understood or valued or appreciated within an organisation, it would never, ever be the right place for me. And that can sometimes feel hard to accept and a bit disappointing because you might think a job sounds brilliant. And I certainly explored and have explored in the past a couple of jobs where you just think, oh, that potentially sounds really amazing, and asked a bit about kind of some cultural things or flexibility and started to get a few alarm bells and had to have the confidence to think, this is not going to be the right thing for me and that's okay. There are lots of jobs out there. I'd rather wait for the right thing. I think not losing sight of you've got as much to give as you have to gain, and make sure you ask questions about things that are important to you.
And we'll give you a resource that we'll give the links to in all the normal places, which we'll tell you at the end of the podcast. But there's a link to something called Best Interview Questions, because it's so easy to just ask I don't know, how long have you been here? What do you think of the company? And as soon as you get that question as an interviewer, it's just a bit boring. But actually, those insightful questions are the ones that you're almost quite interested in answering. So hopefully that link that we give you at the end will help you.
I always quite like, what do you enjoy the most about your job or your role or working here? Because then you're asking that person, what do they enjoy the most? And I always think it's interesting, do they talk about something technical within their job? Do they talk about something cultural? They talk about a specific project they're really proud of. I think, and especially if you're being interviewed by more than one person, it's interesting to see where people go first.
So my last tip then is to know your values and then use questions which allow you to test them. And I'll talk through this a little bit more. But when I was at BP, I had a great job. I had a really good team, but the whole thing just wasn't quite clicking for me. And I was actually quite unhappy towards the end of my time there. And I knew what my values were. I could see where I wasn't kind of fulfilling them. And I knew that my next role, I really wanted to have a really good values alignment. And so when I was going through my interviews at Virgin, some of the interview questions that I was asking were I was asking about my values. So I have values, for example, freedom, growth, energy, and achievement. So I was asking interview questions like, what sort of freedom do people have at Virgin in terms of how they work? What do you think some of the biggest achievements are going to be in the role in the next 12 months? What opportunities are there for people to grow? What's the energy like of the team? They were the questions that I was asking, and they were very personal to me. But based on the answers I got, I could make an assessment of, to what extent do I think I'm going to be happy here? Because ultimately, if you are living your values at work, that's when you're most fulfilled and you're happiest. So there's some stages to this. First, you've got to know your values, and then you've got to ask those questions in the interview. On the knowing your values point, we'll give you some ways that you can explore them in the next podcast. But that was hugely valuable to me. And what I found out in my interview, was offered that job, I took that job, and it definitely came true for me in what I was doing at Virgin. So it worked on that occasion for me.
And my last tip is to start the interview process early. And really, probably what I'm talking about here is appreciating that I think interview processes actually are only going to get longer as people understand how important who you recruit to your organisation is and the kind of value of people, given most businesses now are only as good as the people that they hire. And so these processes, I don't imagine, are going to get any shorter. You might find you have speed dating style of ones, but even then, that tends to be part of a process rather than the kind of the whole answer. And when people sort of say to me, oh, you know, I'm really unhappy in my job and I've just started interviewing, I always think, oh, no, you've probably got 6 months until this works out. Because let's say for every 5 interviews you go for, 2 might not be the right fit for you. 2, you know, you might quite like, but you might not be the right person for them. And 1 might work out, but that 1 might be the 1 in 5 months, 6 months time. And you've still got 6 months in your current job, and you then might have 3 months notice. And suddenly, that's a 9-month process. And having been pregnant for 9 months, I can tell you that's quite a long time. That's what I think of now when I think of 9 months. But that's not that unusual in terms of time scale. And I've talked to a few people recently who've been moving jobs, and they're saying they'd not moved companies for a while and had forgotten just how long it takes. First of all, even finding the role, so whether that's, you know, a job spec that you've seen or someone you've spoken to, through to actually getting that offer, it's just a really long process. I think at most stages of people's career, that doesn't happen super, super quickly. If people have got other experiences, I kind of love to hear if you can do this in a really fast and creative way that still has depth that we've described. I would just really encourage you to get started. Someone used to say to me that you should go for at least 1 interview a year, if anything, just to keep yourself almost a bit in the market and practicing. And do you know what? That's advice I have never taken, because I think really I would still only ever go for an interview if I genuinely wanted the job. I'm not sure about the idea of going for an interview for my own practice, but there probably is something in the sentiment in terms of, are you at least every year making sure that like your LinkedIn profile is up to date? That if you were going to apply for a job, you've got a kind of CV that you're really happy with. Have you captured the things you've achieved, etc.?
Yeah, I think that thing about keeping your CV updated is quite useful, because it keeps your mind fresh on what you're achieving and doing. But yeah, I probably wouldn't apply for a job every year just because of my reputation.
I agree.
I'd be thinking about that. But I like you said, I get the sentiment. So hopefully you've had a bit of a laugh at our best and worst experiences, and we've given you 6 tips that can just help.
I think this is going to make us like unemployable. Like, everyone's going to listen to this and be like, oh, God. Well, if they did that, then maybe she's going to come in and draw me a Venn diagram.
I think this whole podcast might be making us unemployable. But it's fine. We'll be together. So we give you 6 tips so that you can be employable, which is the most important thing about what we do. And then in terms of resources, then we will post these in all the normal places. So as you know, our podcast goes up on a Tuesday and we post this in Instagram, where we're Amazing If, on Twitter, where we're Amazing_if, and on LinkedIn, where it's just Helen Tupper and Sarah Ellis, 2 different profiles. We're not together on LinkedIn yet, but maybe we should be. But the resources we'll post are, first of all, Glassdoor, really great resource to do a little bit of stalking. So that prep that we talked about, this is where you can get a bit of a feel for what employees are saying about the business. This might be some that have left and they might not have left positively, or it could be the existing ones. So just take that into account. But you'll get a bit of a feel for some insight from going on Glassdoor. Also, we'll post some links for best interview questions. I mentioned that. There was one around 30 tips that's from themuse.com, who also do lots of career advice. And they categorize those 30 questions actually by knowing your audience. That's a bit like the prep stuff we've talked about. Anticipating questions, dressing accordingly, which we've not talked about actually, but that how you can kind of dress for the culture and all that kind of stuff to fit in, and then getting your head in the right place. So some lots more things than we've actually talked about in this one here. They're very short and sweet bullet points, but might just give you some more ideas.
Well, thank you as ever for listening. We continue to really appreciate all the support and feedback that we get. Please do subscribe, rate us if you get a chance, share us with other people. It's all really helpful for us. And as we said, next week we're going to be talking about values. Our shortcut for defining values are what makes you you. They're the things that motivate and drive you. I can't promise we're going to crack all of your values in just over half an hour podcast.
No, definitely not. We'll start you
essentially
off.
It's taken us 5 or 6 years to work out on ours for ourselves, but certainly we can help you to think about how you start discovering them. So really looking forward to that next week. In the meantime, thanks for listening and see you soon.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.